Well, ever hear of Close Encounter of the Fifth Kind? That's what we're going to talk with Chris and Ed Sherwood about in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Ed and Chris Sherwood, our guests here. We talk about crop formations. Chris, I'll have you describe this image number five, if you would like, the illuminated disc.
Okay, I can start that, but since it's some experience Ed had, he'll probably have to add a little
sure,
to it because
absolutely.
He has a little more background in
I'll
it.
I'll let you kind of just fill it in here.
Okay, well, this is an illustration Ed did of an encounter that he had a year, almost exactly a year after the two formations previously we were discussing appeared, the two saucergram-looking formations. And this encounter and the sighting that he had happened in England, and what he saw rise from over the hill, or not the hill, I'm sorry, over a hedge, was an object that was illuminated on either end, but it looked pretty well identical to the crop diagram that is the diagram immediately before this picture, and in the same location. It occurred in the same location, and I'll let him describe that in a minute, but I will say that on a number of occasions, luminous manifestations have happened over fields, you know, in England is mainly where I know the stories from, that have the light phenomena has taken on a shape in the sky, and later a crop formation very similar to that has appeared either there or nearby.
Well, and I've got to tell you, that picture, number five, is uncanny. It is just like the crop circle, number four.
Exactly, and yeah. And that's what really leapt out at me at the time, because I knew the location very well. I was only about 300 feet from this object, which was dead silent, and it looked exactly like the pictogram that appeared at the spot it was hovering over the year before. And I feel I deciphered this formation and linking it to the Mexico City July 11th, 91 event. And I feel like, in a sense, I gave acknowledgement to it. And I was out in this field at the dead of night alone in a wheat field near a wood which has had a lot of UFO activity. And I basically said to the universal mind of God, okay, creator, okay, benevolent ET intelligences, I'm alone, I'm here in the heart of crop circle country, and I'm available. I'm available for interaction, and I'm not afraid. And within perhaps a minute or two of stating that out loud,
Here it comes.
It first started, though, as balls of light, but then I saw two of those, and I tried to interact with them from a distance with my mind, and they responded. But this picture here is the third thing that appeared, which wasn't the ball plasma, but was definitely something extraterrestrial.
I got to tell you, it is startling. And then all of a sudden, of course, the formation occurred?
The formation was there the previous year, and I felt like the very fact that the craft appeared there to me interactively when I asked it to appear, you know, I asked something to appear, I stated, I asked the creator, and I got ball plasma within 2 minutes. And then I also asked for, you know, extraterrestrial, benevolent extraterrestrial intelligences, you know, I'm here. And, you know, they replied very quickly.
Okay, there's no question there's some kind of a message behind these formations. The symbols that they use, some of them are obvious, like it duplicated the craft in terms of what it looked like. But the symbols that they use, do you think it might be their language at all?
No, I don't. No, I think that this is one of the ways you can, or two of the ways you can differentiate ET-made formations from what I would say was a divine miracle,
mm-hmm.
is to study their biophysics, that is, the study the soil and study the plants, and you'll notice that those that are made by structured technology, the energies that create those formations have very, very severe and dramatic effects on the soil and plants. it's very common to find burning, for example, charring, to find dead or disformed plants, or find that plants won't grow up again on extraterrestrial craft landing trace marks. Mm-hmm. However, in many of the genuine formations we've found in England, i.e. formations where I've seen plants bent 90 degrees in addition to their natural bend without even a crease, so it's like they were steamed into position, the energies that created these were very, very gentle. They did not damage the soil. They did not alter the soil's chemistry so things wouldn't grow up, nor did the effect on a plant, nor was it so dramatic that it changed it every few hours, like in Toluca in 95 when structured vehicles landed in squash, for example. The leaves of the squash plants kept changing every few hours. They kept looking like they were bubbling on the surface. Well, the primary source, the divine source making basically modern-day miracles,
yeah.
It's much more gentle.
And it actually, experiments have been done from seeds grown from crop circle formations, non-man-made crop circle formations, and we did this ourselves several years ago, and the energies have a subtler effect and even a beneficial effect, to the point where seeds that we planted from a formation that appeared in 1995 sprouted 6 wheat stems instead of the usual one. There was multiple sprouting,
six heads off one stem, which is we haven't heard that since ancient Egypt, when the ancient Egyptians used to grow wheat that was 6 feet tall and had 7 heads off one stem. We had the same effect from planting seeds from inside a large genuine formation in 95. So the energies increased the fertility of the seeds or affected it.
Now, these have obviously been studied by scientists, haven't they? Have they done some tests?
Yes. Dr. W.C. Levengood of Michigan has worked on crop circles for 15 years or around about that figure.
And he agrees there's something very unusual going on here, right?
Oh, definitely. And of course, the biophysical effects vary from formation to formation. And that's why I feel that, if you want to differentiate or try to look at the evidence of those that seem to be of a structured ET nature, and then you look at the evidence of those that seem to be more ball plasma and something supernatural and natural, is that the biophysical evidence helps a lot to differentiate the two. And there's one other thing, and that is the communication, the actual pictogram meaning itself. Remember, at the beginning of the program, we said that the question that many has asked, who and what is behind this, has been answered in the field, in the formations, every year for more than 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it said it in geometry, mathematics, design symbolism, and phenomenal events. And it's also indicated in the biophysical evidence, too. So if you get your mind around the genuine crop circle communications, you find they keep saying God, 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 natural intelligence, divine intelligence, infinite intelligence.
Have you ever seen a crop circle develop right under your nose?
Not right under my nose, but from a distance. And this would bring us on to our next picture, number 6, of a orange ball plasma. 2 days before this picture was taken, I witnessed an identical ball of light.
And how big is this ball?
It's about 15 to 20 feet in diameter.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah,
okay.
And the photographer was very close. In fact, the photographer of this picture asked me just 15 minutes before she took it how to photograph ball plasma.
Yeah.
Because invariably you go to reach for your camera and it vanishes. Or it avoids people with cameras and will appear to people without cameras. It's very interactive with your consciousness, and you can't get away with anything.
Is it hot, Ed? I mean, if you were hit by this, would you get killed?
You would most definitely get knocked out.
All right.
You might not get killed.
Would you be burned or scorched?
Well, maybe not.
It looks hot.
No, not necessarily. I think if you were to stick your hand in it, you would feel cold, not hot.
Really? Okay.
Yes, but that's not to say, though, you might not experience a burning effect.
Sure.
But if you did, it would be from within.
Well, that's true. With cold, you can burn.
Well, it's also like microwave energy. I feel that these ball plasmas are emitting high-frequency sounds, ultrasound, and ultrasound can do just what microwaves can do. It can cook internally.
Absolutely. You know? Now, these ball plasmas, though, they just appear, or do you see them rolling in?
Well, I witness them in two ways. One is I feel they're going to appear, and then they appear, and I see them just as that photograph is. But also, I see them before they appear. There are other types of luminosities that appear at that site, which other people may or may not see around me. So there's luminous energy forming before these manifest, but it's of a frequency that is invisible to the human eye and ordinary consciousness, but you can record it with cameras.
Now, number seven, what did you mean by ball plasmas forming during group meditation?
Well, this was an example, one of many we've done, but this one particularly had a very strong response. We held a meditation at a certain place, or in fact, just before we held a meditation at a certain place, a ball plasma appeared close by, a few miles from us, but we had great visibility. We were on a hill, and we could see what was going on, and I filmed it. Then we did the meditation, where we imagined that we were energizing the land and stimulating it to release its energy. And then another ball plasma appeared. But this time, I asked it on camera to do three things, because I have already previously experienced many times before this that ball plasma, or plasma in itself, is highly, highly psychointeractive. It's highly sensitive,
very charged,
consciousness,
isn't it?
Yeah. Well, also to the input of consciousness. Just by looking at it, you can make requests in a certain state of mind, and it will respond.
How do you know it's not a spirit, Ed?
Pardon?
How do you know it's not a spirit or some kind of apparition like that?
Oh, this is way too big. I've seen these up to 100 feet in diameter.
Oh, my. Okay.
I've seen them dwarf helicopters that go to intercept them, and I've seen one from a distance create a crop circle formation, and, you know, there's many things that would differentiate it.
Yeah. These plasmas also do appear worldwide, and they're known in a lot of different areas, like in the Hesteland Valley of Norway. There's been a project studying plasmas like this for over 20 years, and there are areas like the Brown Mountain Lights in North Carolina, Lake Ontario, Canada.
Sure.
Worldwide, they appear worldwide, and they just have different regional names. They have the Min Min Lights in Australia, many places worldwide where geophysically, you know, there need to be certain conditions where they, you know, are able to manifest. But they do appear. Just this area of England happens to be a very...
There appears to be then some intelligence behind it?
There is intelligence, but I feel that the intelligence behind the manifestation of the ball plasmas is one and the same as the intelligence behind the primary source formations. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's not in that ball plasma per se. It's there, and it's everywhere else too.
Yeah.
It's just manifesting under that form, but that form is not exactly what it is. You know, it's more than that. But this particular one, image 7, I asked it on camera with two other witnesses if it could show us that it was aware of our presence by either moving dramatically, changing form, and or increasing in brightness. And within seconds, it did all three. And it was 4 miles from us. So it showed that there was absolutely no distance whatsoever between the consciousness of the observer making that request and the ball plasma 4 miles away responding to it.
And the request and the reaction almost instant, I would guess.
They were very, very quick. And the previous one, image 6, a month after that happened, a month after the woman photographed this, asking first, because she asked me how to photograph ball plasma, I said, well, we'll ask first, you know. And she went up a hill, disappeared over the hill, and her car stalled, and this ball of light rose up behind the hedge, and she asked first. She had the presence of mind to ask, and it just sat there and let her roll off a whole load of film.
Now, the plasma, does it make the crop formation, or does it just happen to be there when these are going on?
No, I don't. Neither. I feel that the ball plasmas are part of the creative process.
All right.
They may be there. They may not be there. They may be there but not visible. They may be in the vicinity. I've witnessed more than 100 ball plasmas in the last 15 years, and I only saw one create a crop circle from a distance.
All right, image 8. This is an interesting one taken in the Santa Monica Mountains in California.
This is an example, a little example of many that we have on our website in our psychic photography gallery. Basically, we have tried to document and record the energy that's present when we do meditations before, during, and after, and also to document the same type of energy that precedes, in my experience, the appearance of ball plasma. So you've got a more subtle, invisible to ordinary consciousness manifestation of energy, which is there, even if you can't see it in an ordinary state of consciousness, but you can if you alter it, and certainly it's visible to infrared-sensitive camera equipment. And this is a picture of, we did a meditation in the mountains to celebrate the winter solstice of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
It's at a place in the mountains where I feel there is a vortex, what could be, the same basic kind of place that you'd put a sacred site, but in this case, it's just in a wood. And we did our solstice meditation, and just after, various things manifested, which we saw and partly photographed. And just to make sure that we weren't photographing other things caught in the flash, I went back the following day to the very spot, and while I was looking for the mundane things to say mistakenly photographed, I felt a presence a few feet from me, and I turned around and instinctively shot the camera towards it and recorded this column of luminous mist. It was at least 30 feet tall. That's only a little tiny piece of it in the picture.
Right.
And it just rose up from like a dime kind of spot on the ground.
All right. Now, what do you think this was?
I think this is, again, a manifestation of the divine making it, I don't like to say its presence known because it's not really an it, but I feel it was interactive manifestation with my consciousness open to, the infinite mind. And so it's like having a little miracle just manifested to reinforce and affirm that. And we have, we're a self-funded team here. We have no funding from outside whatsoever, and all the funding we have comes from day jobs. But we've poured several thousands of dollars into trying to document basically the presence of energy that is there, whether you see it or not. That typically is there when you meditate, and it's to show the reality of these things.
And there's obviously a tie-in between, I think, psychic energy, consciousness, and these formations then.
They're all locked together.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It is a psychokinetic phenomenon, really, I feel. Most of the genuine formations, if you could make all the man-made ones disappear off the record and you could separate the ET ones, what you are left with is very much a psychokinetic global psychokinetic phenomenon, which is also partly occurring because of the global consciousness state that we're in. I've witnessed poltergeist phenomena in my life, and I know that often it occurs to draw your attention to something you're not giving your attention to.
And these are happening all around the planet now, aren't they?
Which
The formations, the orbs, the plasmas, it's everywhere. It's not just England.
No, exactly. But with the formations, the genuine formations, it has been predominantly, more than the greatest percentage of genuine formations have occurred within 40 miles of Stonehenge.
We'll talk about that when we come back. Hold on. Well, of course, at the top of the hour, we'll open up the phone lines, give you an opportunity to chat with Ed and Chris Sherwood. And we're also going to talk about a humanoid-type creature that was spotted in the skies. That is one weird picture. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And tell me about this tie-in with Stonehenge and what was going on there.
Well, it's a very interesting fact of the crop circle phenomenon that most of the formations, most of the genuine ones, have formed around Stonehenge. I think that, there are certain places on the Earth where, let's say, natural energy is concentrated, almost like a chakra of a human body, and Stonehenge falls under that. And we have more than 900 stone circles, for example, in Great Britain. That's probably more stone circles in such a small area of land compared to other land masses in the world than anywhere else. The fact that the phenomenon has focused in England and that the English language is such a widespread language, I think, has greatly facilitated in it spreading around the world.
Do you have any doubts that Stonehenge was built by man?
No.
Okay.
Not really, no.
Neither do
no,
I.
But that's not to say it was not inspired by higher principles.
True.
So,
or helped out. Those stones are pretty big.
Exactly. But the genuine crop circle phenomenon has, for more than two decades now, also appeared in close proximity to major ancient sacred sites, not just Stonehenge, but others, typically Avebury and Silbury Hill, for example, are two major sites. Silbury Hill itself is one of two pyramids we have in Great Britain, ancient Neolithic pyramids. And in the 80s, it was observed that the formations were not only forming on energetic, dowsable places in the landscape where earth energy converges, but also they were occurring more and more and closer to major sacred sites. Like to say to us, and they did say this in their design symbolism too, that this is coming from a sacred source.
I want to jump ahead, if we can, for just a moment, Ed, to pictures 16 and 17, because they are bizarre, to tell you the truth. The flying humanoid over Santa Monica and over Mexico City, they look, when you look at them and try to compare the structure, they look like they could be the same thing. One obviously looks like it may be in some kind of craft of some sort, and the other not. But tell me what these are.
Image number 16 is a still image from a piece of footage that I shot from an encounter we had over our apartment in broad daylight last November. And the interesting thing about this encounter was that we had just learned from a good friend and colleague, Santiago Iturria, from Mexico, who has been documenting the flying humanoid phenomenon in Mexico extensively. And he released on the internet early last year reports of these being sighted in Mexico. Then we met him the following month, and then later on in the year, we attended a presentation he gave where he showed at least 10 different clips of different types of humanoids filmed in Mexico, and most of them looked identical to what we filmed.
Yes.
Over our apartment.
The head and the body looked the same.
Yep, and the head moved, and the body twisted on its torso, and what looked like arms moved and came out. It was an interactive experience, too, for us, because, I mean, but just the fact we'd just learned of these types of events and seen some images ourselves, 3 months later, we then had the experience. But also, yeah, the night before, I asked for, and I don't usually ask, even though I've had a lot of encounters in my life, I don't usually ask ETs for a sign unless I, feel really necessary. And on this particular occasion, a few hours basically late at night, I asked for a sign of support, and the very next morning there was this flying humanoid figure coming towards us over the tops of the roofs, only about three blocks from us.
It looks like a flying Sasquatch.
Yeah, he was. He was about 7 feet tall from the estimate we could make of its size.
Well, what do you think? Was he in an object? I don't see that. It looks like he's just floating up there.
Exactly. And when you look at the clips from Mexico, it seems as if some are flying unaided, or at least it's not obvious how they are flying, and others seem to be aided with technology. The image number 17 taken by Horacio Roquette in Mexico City, in air of Mexico City, June of this year, seemed as if it was sitting on something.
Yeah, yet you can see his feet underneath it.
That's right. It's like he's sitting almost on a chair of some kind, of, you know, a vehicle of something you can sit on, and there's a power source.
Looks like a flying Ski-Doo.
Yeah, and it's amazing because we have seen the footage. I mean, this is a still, but we've seen the actual footage, and it is incredible. And this gentleman has also filmed this twice more since then because the events are ongoing.
You don't think it's some human experimenting with some kind of device, do you?
No.
No, they've been filmed enough times, and the footage zoomed in enough to where you can see there's nothing, you know, supporting them or
right.
No.
Okay.
And
yeah.
Also, there's so much UFO activity happening, you know, either side of this, where these things are happening, that it's clearly related. But I would like to add, though, that I don't think these flying humanoids that are being witnessed down in Mexico and a few in the U.S. Are the same beings behind what are also being witnessed, particularly in Mexico, and being called UFO fleets. That is, they're not just witnessing...
Which would be picture 18, right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Picture 18 was taken by Rosario Oviedo in, or rather above, the capital city of San Luis Potosi in Mexico, on the day that Jaime Maussan was scheduled to give a conference, a precedented conference about the UFO activity in Mexico. So this was, I think, an interactive event for Jaime, at least to affirm the information that he was putting out publicly at the time about these type of things. But in Mexico, in the last 3 years, then this is information given by our good friend Santiago Iteria, mm-hmm. who's written some excellent reports on these events. As of the last 3 years, roughly, the UFO activity in Mexico has increased dramatically through the sightings of fleets and also the sightings of these flying humans.
And explain fleets for everyone.
Well, fleets, multiple objects, on several occasions have been filmed in broad daylight with what looked like up to 100 objects in the sky. Each one of the objects appears to be mostly a disc similar to the one we showed you, image number 2, which I forgot to mention was photographed by Tom Augustine, who recently passed away. He was a pilot who had an amazing experience and with that image. But it looked individually, each one of these little UFOs, white UFOs, they look like discs. And
we should say to people who can't see these images that these are photographed in blue sky, broad daylight, and very clear. It's not pinpoints of light in the dark.
Clearly they want to be seen, and at the same time, they're doing it in a way that I think is safe. They're not panicking the population mm-hmm. where they're appearing above. They're appearing, you know, high up enough, or they're small and not scary objects, and they're silent. And
it's just strange.
They appear for a while, and then they disappear.
What do you think is going on with these?
This one in particular is very interesting because it appeared there were two simultaneous fleet sightings on June 24th of this year over two capital cities in Mexico, and the second one, which probably only occurred very much close to the same time as the other one in San Luis Potosi, the picture that's here, occurred over Alapa, which is a capital city close to the Gulf Coast. And in fact, it's the capital city of the state of Veracruz on the Gulf Coast. And what was interesting about this other event was that it was witnessed. It was a broad daylight event. Multiple objects, 14 were observed. But it was also witnessed by the mayor of the capital city, a lot of police, a lot of the media, which also filmed it. And the objects didn't just appear sort of randomly in the sky. They formed a sign in the sky.
A sign.
And I'm working on an article right now, which I hope to have on our website in the next few weeks, which is perhaps going to be somewhat controversial, because it seems that there were UFO signs on both sides of the Gulf Coast before Hurricane Katrina came through and did its damage. Both of these signs were very portentous.
And what kind of signs? Like zodiac or
no,
what?
The first sign, which appeared over Alapa, and particularly over the major government building of that capital city, which was kind of like the White House equivalent, place called Casa Vera Cruz, which translated means House of the True Cross. Well, interestingly, right across from Alapa and Casa Vera Cruz, geographically, is New Orleans. And 9 days before Hurricane Katrina was declared a tropical storm, 7 UFOs were reportedly filmed, and we've seen images, and again, this is an article in progress, but apparently over Florida, 9 days before Hurricane Katrina was declared a tropical storm, 7 UFOs appeared in the sky and were filmed forming a cross in the sky.
That's amazing. I had not heard that.
So imagine you've got, I think it's like 4 or 5 UFOs, just like these clusters, but positioned one above the other with a gap in between and one either side, and it forms a Latin cross. Just any cross, but a Latin cross.
Do you see them fly into that formation?
No. No, the only available clip of footage from this that was apparently sent in to a website shows a very short clip of the videographer trying to zoom in on these 7 objects. I've had someone who's knowledgeable in digital effects look at the raw digital clip that we have and say it's very, very interesting, and it looks like it could well be authentic. And it's very, very uncanny. Even, you know, at this point, we can't fully authenticate, because we're still trying to get more information on this cross in the sky over Florida just before the hurricane came through. But it looks like, again, the ETs that are operating in our skies are very aware of what's happening down on the ground, and they are appearing so that we see them, hoping, I think, that we acknowledge their existence so that we can move forward, so we can actually maybe start to have exchange, contact, interaction on a more developed scale.
Why Mexico?
Again, I think, echoed by Chris earlier, they are responding the most positive and open to these events. And imagine if you're an extraterrestrial civilization that, let's say, is very aware of what's happening on planet Earth and with humanity, and is very concerned with the damage that's taking place to the planet by our actions, and wanting to stimulate us to wake up and realize certain realities, including we're not alone. They need to appear so that we see them, and they need us to acknowledge them. Once we acknowledge their existence, we can really move on. But until we acknowledge their existence, you know, they can't directly, easily help us to avoid things like disastrous events. They can't warn us easily. They can't do anything until we globally acknowledge they exist.
What about the tsunami of December 26?
It's a good question, and we're looking into that. We've been very interested to know if there were any UFO events, plasma and or structured vehicles that preceded that event. But certainly, on other occasions, they have shown that they are aware. And if this cross in the sky was an authentic piece of footage, which at least preliminarily it looks like it was, they're giving us clear signs, a cross in the sky before Hurricane Katrina came through. I mean,
I sometimes wonder, Ed, if apparitions that people saw at Fatima when they claimed that the sun came down, I wonder if they were looking at some object, not the sun, and maybe it was directly in front of the sun, you know, in terms of its perspective. But I wonder if it was an object that came down and then went back up again.
possibly, or they witness the collective psychokinetic manifestation of their consciousness, their collective consciousness. So, you know, if you were able to get the consciousness energy of all the people present witnessing and manifest a symbolized collective expectation, then, you know, psychokinetic energy is very, very potent energy.
Have your conclusions of these three potential sources, have they evolved based on the years of experience in your research, or did you have these thoughts relatively soon into your studies?
I had them pretty soon. I mean, I started doing research in 84 from a distance through all available literature. Then in 1990, when I stepped into the field interactively to find out for myself really what's going on, because certain indications were pointing to that these events were not just landing marks, but this is really a communication that was being laid out in the fields for us to study. I quickly came to the conclusion after just one season that there was more than one source. They weren't all man-made. They weren't all ET-made either. There's more than one source, and that there had to be another source other than extraterrestrial at work. Because of all the phenomenal events, the nature of the biophysical evidence, and also the communication. You know, we've studied the design symbolism of hundreds of formations, like a graphologist would study someone's handwriting. So imagine you're us, and you've studied, let's say, a dozen different people's handwriting for the last 20 years, every day. And you've come to know every little nuance of expression in those designs. And you've come to see how people state that, you know, how they put themselves into it. For example, how human circle makers put their egos and their ideas and their contrived designs down. And you know, how, for example, genuine formations which have incredible geometry, mathematics, design symbolism, biophysics, phenomenal events associated with them. With this phenomenon having made world media attention in 1990, it just sucked in a whole load of people wanting to try and see how easy it was to make formations, and then people who became motivated to try to prove that the researchers couldn't tell one from another, and then people who just very insidiously going into fields and imitating or copying and rehashing aspects of real formations, or, you know, design elements of real formations, so that a lot of people looking at the phenomenon just can't tell easily one from another. And that many, right across the board, including many researchers, I mean, we feel that we look in books and calendars, we see in every single one more than half are man-made, and they're not being called out as man-made. You know, there's a great lacking of discernment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also how the Center of Human Circle Makers have hijacked this phenomenon.
Well, when we come back, let's open up the phone lines. I also want to talk about something that happened 10 years after you began your crop circle research, that historic Shoemaker-Levy comet that smashed into Jupiter. That's a strange story as well. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment. Your calls on Coast to Coast AM.